And now we've got Miss Jacobs. Welcome.
Well, hello. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you, too. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on the show today.
Well, you know, you've got such a wonderful background. And before I let you tell us a little bit about that, and we do want to hear, because you've got just a marvelous background, I'd like to ask you the first question that I like to ask all my guests. And that is, what took you from being just another consumer, just another, you know, roll the ball along, make a little living, raise a little family, to a person who really had to make a difference, who takes the time, who puts in the energy to make a difference? Kristen, what was it for you?
Well, believe it or not, it was a stop sign in front of the elementary school. I was standing there with my son, who's now 27. He was a new kindergartner, and we were trying to cross at the crosswalk, and the school guard person was standing there with her stop sign up, and I had one child on my hip and the other one holding my hand, and my friend was holding her daughter by the hand when a car blew through the crosswalk without even stopping, with the person in the sign up, the whole thing. And if my friend had not been holding her daughter's hand to snatch her out of the path of the car, she would have been hit. And I was furious. And I had been asking for a stop sign there for quite some time, and with no luck. And after that, I decided something's got to be done. And I was unincorporated, so I didn't have a city. I had the county. So I went to the county engineers, and I tried to get a stop sign. You know, it took me 5 years. I finally didn't get a stop sign. I got speed humps in the neighborhood. That's where it all started. And what's interesting is my son is now 27. When he was 23, we finally were able to get that flashing yellow light was installed in front of that school, slow school zone.
Well, that's
how long it took.
That's a great story. Well, you know, it speaks to your perseverance. Too many times people, they just write it off because they think they can't make a difference. And it just does one's heart good to hear that people every day say, you know what, I'm not going to stand for it. I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to make this a better world. You've had a marvelous term of service in the Broward County government. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I know. I have been so blessed. I think it's been, sometimes I walk into the building and I slide my card through and the door opens and I have to stop and think to myself, this is so amazing. It's really me. There's still really great things going on and they continue and I get to be a part of it. It's just been absolutely wonderful. When I ran for the county in 1998, somebody asked me what my platform was. What was I going to run on? And I said, the environment, of course. And they said, you're crazy. That's not a big issue. That's not sexy enough. People aren't going to be interested in the environment. And I said, I think you're wrong. I think that people who live in Broward County are concerned about how we're growing and that we're not looking at how we link things together. It's not that I'm against growth. There are areas people have property rights. It's the way that we're growing. It's that we are not paying attention to transportation. We're not paying attention to what we're planting or where we're planting it, or the different rules that are guiding how we're growing. We could do this much, much better. And in fact, those are some of the things to this day that still have resonated most for me in office, and the things that I am most passionate about, which are issues associated with energy becoming sustainable and the issues of transportation. Why does everybody have to own a car? Why can't we create the kind of community where you don't necessarily have to have a car? And then above all, the environment, trying to do and make a community that's sustainable so that it's not just meeting the needs of us here today, but all of those still to come.
You know, I look at your information package, and I see a person who is working so hard in so many of the most critical areas of our society. I'm going to ask you about a couple different ones. Your Audubon Award. Can you talk a little about that?
The interesting thing about being selected for the different awards is that there are so many different issues that you're all tackling at once, and then you are lucky to get singled out on one. The thing with being the Environmentalist of the Year was really exciting because there's so many different projects that I had under kind of going on at the same time, and so to be able to receive that award just meant a lot. one of the things that Audubon, of course, deals with is migratory birds and birds in and of themselves.
Sure.
And we happen to sit in a migratory path that takes birds not only through Broward County, but all the way up through the Northeast Corridor. In fact,
mm-hmm.
there's about three of these flight paths across our country, and we are right in the middle of one of them. And one of the things I always thought was interesting is that if you were a bird and you were flying through Broward County at any given place, you might be hard-pressed to find a meal and a place to lodge and to raise your young or to even get a drink of water. And so that's kind of where the Naturescape Broward program came together, which was to look at how we're using water, how much of the water we're using, what we're doing with it afterwards, and what are the kind of plant materials that we're putting in place that are driving some of our water use. Because we're averaging around, depends on the city, but between 50 and 60% of all our potable water is being used to irrigate landscaping. Couldn't we do this differently? Couldn't we marry the elements of the National Wildlife Federation with our needs for water, and water is turning more and more to be a huge issue for us, and marry this into a program that represented or looked at people, plants, and animals, that we all need to coexist, and of course that we're stronger when we allow these things to be in their healthiest state amongst all of these levels. So that was kind of the idea for the Naturescape Broward, was that when you got these issues right on your property, that you would be certified that you're using water responsibly, that you're using your energy responsibly, that you are putting the right kind of native plants in that will feed wildlife and birds in particular. And so as a part of this program, it was that once you had a sign or you were certified by the county as a Naturescape, then you would, in essence, become a little dot on our map. And our goal was that wherever you stood in the county, within a mile of that place would be another certified site. So if you were that bird migrating across Broward County, you would have these stops every quarter mile throughout the county. And we started the program 2001, and we started it with about 200 National Wildlife Certified properties in the county. Today, we're more than 3,000 certified properties, and we were the first countywide habitat in the United States.
Well, that's fantastic. So much of Florida's development issues hinge on water, water availability, water potability, and of course, water quality, and not just for humans, but for the animal life and sea life around us. There are so many stresses, so many strains on the water quality in Florida, from the development that had been allowed to just go crazy, to agricultural or landscaping runoff, to mercury from these processing plants. It's been an issue that's been ignored for far too long, so it's wonderful to hear that you were involved in that. And now to take a slightly tangential turn, an environmental quality of a different kind, could you talk a little bit about the work on the Community Coalition for a Living Wage?
Oops. You hear me?
Yeah, we got disconnected just
okay.
for a second, but you're back. Did you hear my question?
Okay. Yes, I did, and I'm sorry, the line dropped off for just a moment. You were asking about the living wage. And
right.
The living wage, it is always surprising to me how expensive it is to live in Broward County. And to the degree to which you are working for our county either as an employee or as a contracted employee, back then, as I started to look at some of the issues facing our workers, wages were a huge part of that. And so the idea of the living wage was that no one would work for the county and not have that work recognized, and that the amount that you would be earning per hour would be no less than 10% above the federal poverty line, which sounds like a pretty pathetic marker. And in fact, it's not the highest one out there. The national poverty line was actually a line to judge what it took to feed families by a home economist in the 1950s. It is still the barometer that the federal government uses today to decide things like who's eligible for food stamps. And they know that this marker, because it looks at no other real cost associated with living, it doesn't look at the cost of housing or energy or transportation. It solely looks at what it costs to feed a family. And because they know that that barometer is so inept and gauging what the actual costs to a family are. For example, for food stamps, the federal government takes 150% of that federal poverty line. So when I proposed that we go 10% above the federal poverty line, it didn't seem like a very big ask to me at the time. And Lord, Lord, I couldn't believe how controversial it became that we were actually going to set a living wage. And it was a huge debate. It passed the county commission with a 5-4 vote. It's been in place ever since. And it offers a wage that is associated with what it costs to live in this county so that you're not for Broward County full-time 40 hours a week and then having to go stand in line to get food stamps. It applies to those who are county employees as well as those who contract with the county in 7 specific service categories. And what I think is most amazing about the fact that we passed this so long ago, in fact, at the time we passed it, we were mirroring the ordinance that was already in place in Miami-Dade, but we tied ours to an embassy so it adjusts each year with the cost of living, whereas Miami-Dade did not. What's amazing is that there are lots of companies who come to compete for work in Broward County who would not be subject to the living wage because they are not in those 7 specific categories. But I tell you, they walk in the door, and when they come in to tell me about their company, they know the question that's next out of my mouth is, what is your lowest paid employee earning? And so they come in with that information and compete on that information. And so what we have in Broward County is the outcome of that is that we are no longer taking this race to the bottom. How low can you pay people and they'll still show up to work, which creates a revolving door? Instead, we are paying people a decent wage and they are not only coming to work but staying, and the longevity that's come about as a part of its passage has just been quite remarkable, and particularly in the paratransit sector where you had some of the worst service happening because whoever was driving for these different companies and learning the county, they were working for you today, but they were looking for a job to leave you tomorrow. And you had this revolving door of employees, and the service really was just not where it should have been. Once the living wage passed, however, those salaries are within range of what it takes to live here. And so you've seen that revolving door stop, and in paratransit, I think, is probably the best example of that loyalty factor where employees are staying put and the benefit that we've seen as a county government.
You know, I can't help but say this, and, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to have to compliment you once or twice during the evening, but I got to tell you, so many people think of environmentalists or people who are concerned about the environment as people who care more about plants and animals than they do about people. And what this says to me is your concern about the environment doesn't extend to just wild things, not just plants, not just birds, but it's concerned about the human environment as well, the wage environment, because, of course, that's as much a part of the ecology as anything else. So I want to congratulate you for being what I think of as a very well-rounded progressive activist.
Well, I thank you. And I think of the environment isn't just the air and the water, although those are obviously important to our own sustainability, but it's the choices that you make every day, and it's the choices that government puts out there for you to make, or that you can choose from. So it's the choice that you made to get in your car or to take a bus. But can you make that choice? If the bus isn't going to get you where you need to go, then it's not fair for government to say, or anybody else to say, you're not making the most environmentally friendly choice. We have to put those opportunities out there. And so, I mean, there's a lot of really cool ways in which we can make those things happen. One of them is something I'm really excited, and that was in December, we launched the first ever countywide bicycle sharing program in Broward County.
Excellent.
It was a 4-city simultaneous launch, and it's built around the idea that you can find other ways to get around the community that may not necessarily involve your car. In fact, if you add a bicycle to the mix, getting from your home to the bus stop or to the train, if you have a bicycle available, might help you in making that choice. But you may not have the ability to put a bike on your car and drive it somewhere, or you may not own a bicycle at all. So the Bike Share program is this really fantastic program where you swipe a card, you become a member, or you can walk up to the kiosk and do it. But generally, swipe your card, you take the bike out, you take it wherever you want to go, you drop it off in a different kiosk, or you could go back to the one that you started from if you chose. And then you leave and you go about your day. We have them down by the water near the water taxis. We have them along the beach areas. We have them in downtown Fort Lauderdale. So if you manage to snag that coveted spot in the parking garage and you don't want to move your car, we would like you to leave your car there. And instead of clogging the downtown with more cars, borrow one of these bikes through the kiosk and go to lunch and come back. And so as a part of that, as a part of the environment, it isn't enough for us then to say, well, here's a bike, but let's make sure that these bikes are thinking about the environment in which you were leaving your office to go ride a bike. If you're a woman wearing a skirt, for example, you might like to know that our bicycles have skirt guards on them. Or if you're a guy with long pants, that they also have chain guards that keep them, the chain and all the mechanisms completely covered so that there's no chance that you'll get oil on your pants or get your pant leg caught up in the chain. The baskets are designed in such a way that they accommodate a lock as well as the things you might want to carry along. And it's been kind of fun to look at even the fashion industry in trying to encourage people to ride bikes all around the country. There are designers that are now coming out with clothes that accommodate bicycle use. And so we're now working on between the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the Broward County Transit Department, what an unlikely combination for them to be putting together a fashion show in working with the Gallery of Mall to look at clothes that will help, particularly for women, help them maybe make the choice to ride a bike to work.
Listen, before I let you go and talk about your candidacy plans, which I want to let you do, two things. Number one, I want to ask you about another area that is of tremendous concern given today's political environment. You have been a leader in women's rights and also in Planned Parenthood as well. So could you speak to that a little bit? We've all seen some of the shenanigans going on with the ALEC-driven legislation.
It's, you know, for women well, first of all, there are 62 million women of childbearing age right now. To have our bodies and the control of our bodies back before Congress and being questioned when we kind of thought that issue was resolved about 40 years ago is shocking that we're back to having those conversations today. It's not that American women, young women of today, took those rights for granted or the women who fought so hard for those rights to be in place for granted. It's that it's kind of like the air you breathe. It's the way it is. We don't have lynchings anymore either. We don't, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, why all of a sudden is this back before us? Do we truly have to pick up this mantle and run with it? And the answer, shockingly, is yes, we do. This issue is being challenged. Women's rights are being challenged. And we the ground that we thought we gained is all possibly at risk. So my involvement on these issues has, in the past, been very strong, very pro-choice woman. But to see that they are all before us again, this tells me that this is the time when young women, women of childbearing age, need to come together yet again to ensure that these rights are not lost going forward.
Well, I want to thank you so much for that. You know, you're a woman with an extraordinary past, a past you should be so very proud of. And before I let you talk about the future, I do want to mention one thing. We have a great group of progressive broadcasters who we all work together with, and I want to support them with just a quick mention. Gwen Holden Berry and her show Here Be Monsters, Brian Stetton and his show Progress Toward Democracy, Anita Stewart and her show of Wise Women, Amy Tidd, The Amy Tidd Show, and also Diane G. and her show The Wild Wild Left. So that being said, I want to thank also my co-producer, Mickey Royce. And now, Ms. Jacobs, could you talk about your candidacy and tell us what you see as the foremost issues facing Florida today?
Well, I think for South Florida, one of the biggest issues facing us are the issue, and particularly the district that I'm running in, District 22, that is generally, or specifically, a coastal region that runs from the airport in Fort Lauderdale along the 595 highway all the way north to Peanut Island. It hugs the coast and goes inland for several miles. But the issues facing this coastal district, of course, are the ocean and sea level rise, the loss of our freshwater wells to sea level rise and saltwater intrusion. The issues of water are of huge concern. The issues also of our, and I spoke about it a little earlier that we didn't talk about, that I've been heavily engaged in addition to water issues and coastal issues, but the issues of energy and sustainability. I think that the American public is really sick of paying out the kind of monies that we are at the pump, and that our future needs to be more guided by our own energy and by our own sustainable policies. There is absolutely no reason why here in South Florida there isn't a solar build, solar armament on every single building, school, home. You go to other countries in Europe and you will see that they are using solar to a much greater degree. And it isn't just solar. It's wind. It's all kinds of technologies that would keep, that would stave off the need to be drilling off of our coast, which I do not support. So looking at our own sustainability and our ability to control our destiny, I think, is inherently important for Americans and South Floridians in particular, and one of those issues that I hope to work on when I'm in Congress. The other issue is one of transportation. Right now, we have some great, we have a community that is growing and growing. I chair Tri-Rail, the three-county commuter line that's been running for the last 21 years. And we saw recently very many attempts by our state and our governor to try to take Tri-Rail apart. And luckily, in working with the State Department of Transportation, I was able, as the chair of Tri-Rail, to bring about some calling back of the guard and some settling down of the issues for the next 7 years that will keep Tri-Rail running. But we know that we need more and bigger dollars for public transportation and alternative forms of transportation as this region continues to grow. Cars are great. It's not that I'm anti-car, but I always think that everybody who's driving down the road may not want to get out of their car, but I'll bet you they wish the person in the car next to them would, so they would have a little more room on the roadway. And so finding those and building those systems are really important. And then, of course, you have the issues of our budget. We have a huge deficit in this country that is hurting the future. The young people who are working today are going to be inheriting these problems. And it's really important that we get up there and begin to talk to one another across party lines, across ideology. It is no longer appropriate to throw word bombs. I'm sick of it. I know the American public is sick of it. We need to start sending the kind of people up to Congress that will commit to work across all of these different lines to pull us in the same direction. South Florida's future depends on our ability to work together. And right now, Congress is simply not working together. This is at our own detriment if we can't take a new tack and decide that we're going to send a different kind of person to Washington, someone who's saying up front, I'm going to work with you and we're going to find solutions and we're going to have no excuses. We're going to find a way to make it work.
May I ask you a question about solar power? Solar, geothermal, alternative energy. It just seems to me that there is no reasonable excuse. So therefore, if there's no reasonable excuse, what do you think has been the big impediment to take the Sunshine State in a direction to take advantage of all that solar power?
Oh, there's so many little things that are in the way. So just to go through a couple of them. One of the first things is that you have a for-profit company, Florida Power and Light, and they are building and have built one of the largest solar arrays in the nation in the state of Florida. And it's great that this company is doing this. They have, and they will tell you, Greg, that they have the largest alternative forms of energy of any company in the country. And this is true. But the difference is that we need to be able to be generating, every home, every school, every business ought to be a generator of its own energy and be able to buy whatever excess or whatever additional energy that it can create on its own from the main grid. Instead, we have a different kind of system. And this is largely because we don't have something called feed-in tariff, as they do in many other countries. FPL has largely resisted feed-in tariff, and it is one of the changes that needs to happen. It's one of the issues that the Public Service Commission, I think, has not weighed in as seriously or as strongly as it could, and it's something that should change. Another issue, though, is that we have the Department of Energy has identified one of the biggest barriers is that you have, for example, in Broward County, 31 different cities, all with different zoning departments, all at different levels of expertise, and that they are coming out to your property and they are having a conversation about whether or not you need solar, and they don't necessarily know because they weren't trained. So the Department of Energy actually put out a grant called the Sunshot Grant recently, and Broward County, along with almost every county in the state of Florida and across the country, participated in vying for that grant, and I'm really excited that we won the grant. And in fact, we're the only county in the Southeast United States that did win the grant in this part of the country. And basically what it required was for us to go up and make some of the changes that the Department of Energy has identified as those roadblocks that are standing in the way. And that is just simply the zoning and the expertise of those who work in the city. So it is to create a model ordinance that would work not just for this county, but for all the counties in Florida and states beyond. So we won the grant, and we're busy working in that direction and really excited about the opportunities. And the third reason, I think, that when we talk about excuses and things that need to change, one of those is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And you may think, what do federally backed mortgage companies have to do with the issues of solar? Well, there's a program called PACE. It stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. And basically what it does is it allows local governments to lend money to homeowners, businesses, and school districts to be able to improve by solar, by energy efficiency, changing out windows, and all the different things that you can do to make a home need less energy and actually create some of its own energy. But these systems are expensive. So it allows the homeowner or business owner to go out and build these, have them put onto their property, and then pay it off over a 20 or 30-year period of time, depending on the type of improvements that they've made. And it runs with the land. It runs as almost an assessment on your property. It is not a loan. But Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac put the brakes on. This was a program that was just catching fire nationwide, particularly on the west part of the country, when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stepped in and said, whoa, hold on, you are now putting a loan in front of us. We are the first holder of a loan, and we will not be in second position. So this challenge put all of these programs at risk, and it has now been 3 years, and there has been absolutely no movement on it in the last 2 years. It's one of the things that I hope to work on when I'm in Congress, because those are federally backed loans, and there should be more guidance coming out of the federal government to free this issue up. In Sonoma County, California, for example, they pretty much thumbed their nose at what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were saying, and their program is amazing what they're doing out west. We should be doing the same thing here in Florida, and we're going to need to make some changes in Congress before that can happen.
Let me ask you one more environmental-related question. You know, so many of us are still concerned about the wreckage that British Petroleum left of the Gulf of Mexico and the impact it has on Florida from the panhandle around. Now, I understand you have some background in working in the Gulf as well.
Not so much the Gulf. The work that I've been doing in the last, my goodness, it's almost 2 years now, since the White House appointed me to the National Oceans Council, which was to look at all of the different issues affecting America's coastlines, the Great Lakes, and the U.S. territories. The Gulf Coast have, of course, the Gulf states, unique issues associated with this bill. And Florida, as a part of the National Oceans Council, what the president was seeking to do was to begin to come up with some policies that address the myriad issues that all the different stakeholders have, whether it's those who make their living in fishing or those who are in tourism, whether it's your hotels or it's just marine-based uses. It's land-based uses that are affecting the health of our oceans. And then, of course, there's the whole long range of energy uses. And then, of course, there's the concern of the tribes that on all of these stakeholders kind of converging. And so the federal government divided our country into 9 regions. Florida sits in a really unique place. We belong to the southeast region, which is Georgia, North and South Carolina, as well as Florida. And then we also belong to the Gulf Coast states, the alliance. And so it's an interesting place for us to be in, because whatever happens in the Gulf has great potential to, of course, swing along into the southern end of our state and come along up the eastern side and go up. So we were very blessed in South Florida to have the currents go the way they did and not be able to pull all of that oil and that sludge back down around through the Keys and these incredibly sensitive ecosystems. We were spared, but there are over 3,800 platforms out there drilling for oil today. And while we were spared, we're not really sure what the future holds, not just for those that are out in the Gulf, but remember that the Chinese are now doing exploration for oil off of Cuba. And as anyone will tell you, the Chinese don't exactly have the best environmental record. So there are huge concerns about what's going off our coast. In fact, some of the exploration that they're doing could yield exploratory methods in the waters as close as 45 miles off of Florida shore.
Do you know, is there adequate funding to get a preliminary snapshot of water quality conditions in that region so that we can have a baseline against which to measure further impacts?
Sadly, right now, no, but it is one of the issues that we are working on with NOAA. In fact, I have a meeting coming up next week to discuss this very issue. Unfortunately, you have NOAA, you have Coast Guard, you have the Army Corps, none of which are all of which whose funding has been attacked. In fact, NOAA's funding, there was a bill in Congress just recently to tuck NOAA under the Department of Interior, which would further gut their funding. So we're in a precarious place as far as trying to baseline the conditions off our coast. Probably the deepest pockets to do this would be the Navy. And so we're engaging in some conversations there to try to understand whether and where we can find the dollars to bring personnel to work with NOVA and the county and the four-county compact, which we didn't even get a chance to talk about, the four counties, Miami-Dade, Broward, Monroe, and Palm Beach County, coming together in a formal way, signing a compact to work together on issues affecting the South Florida region, and particularly in areas of sustainability. And our coastline is also a part of that conversation.
Well, you have to come back and talk about that sometime in the future.
I would love to. As you can tell, I've got my fingers in a lot of different projects.
There's a lot of things going on. You are truly an example to people. You're working in environment, you're working in the human environment, you're working transportation, water quality. It's amazing. I hope your talents and your skills and your vast experience is recognized by Florida's voters in a few short weeks. So I wish you every success in that arena. Do you want to make any final comment before the show is over?
Just that I'm really hoping that people are getting engaged and watching what's going on in this political race, that it is not just enough to vote in November, but to understand the primaries are the area where you start to weed out candidates, where you understand what their backgrounds are, and encourage people as the mud starts to sling and people get disgusted and turn away from the electoral process to resist that and instead to spend some time investigating all of the different candidates out there, whether it's your local water control district or your city, county, Congress, or a state seat. But really pay attention to who's running and pay attention to their background and their messaging so that we do have a good number of people turning out on August 14th. I think it's one of the most important elections that we have as a state. A lot of important decisions to be made on that day. And
Thank
the more
you.
Informed we are, the better off we'll be.
Thank you so much. I sure appreciate you coming by, and we'll have you back again soon, okay?
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I want to thank you all once again for joining us.